Well, I'm here today with Greg Grooms and to talk about Francis Schaeffer, but I'll let him introduce himself and tell a little bit about your ministry as it is now. So,
well, I'm kind of bivocational. My wife and I operate a Christian study center in Austin, Texas. We serve students and faculty at the University of Texas called Hill House. And with undergraduates, our work is more, we'll help you grow your faith up so you can survive on campus. With graduate students, it's more, I have my faith, I have my studies, I'd like to bring them together. I don't know how. And we work more with grad students than we do with undergraduates.
And how long have you been there?
23 years now. All yeah. Right. And then I'm also an associate pastor at a PCA church in Austin, All Saints Presbyterian.
Okay.
Part-time.
Now, tell me something about your first encounter with Francis Schaeffer. And at that time, were you a Christian or were you not?
And I don't know how much of background to go into this. I grew up in a Christian family, Southern Baptist family. I went away to college, went to Tulane University in New Orleans. And it was there that I first met people who were intelligently not Christian. And that frightened me. It made me realize that the chief reason that I had been a believer is because I wanted to be like all of the interesting people back home. And the idea that you could be intelligent and interesting and not Christian was an eye-opener. So I graduated from college with a... Pardon me. Let me kill this. Hanging on to my faith by the skin of my teeth. I went back to Alabama, got a job, and thought that all of my concerns would go away. And after a couple of years, they had not. The same questions followed me home. So I quit my job and threw some things in a bag, and I just went to Europe. I didn't go to La Brie. I spent 6 months bumming around Europe. And I would like to tell you that I was looking for something. I wasn't. I ran into a couple of girls in Germany who were attractive and spoke English, and they were going to La Brie, and they gave me directions. So I showed up late in the summer of 78 and thought, this place looks interesting. I'll stay for a couple of weeks. I stayed for 16 years.
You stayed there for 16 years. Mm-hmm. So you're meeting Schaeffer for the first time, I assume, mm-hmm. when you go to La Brie. What stands out in your mind?
Well, when I first arrived at La Brie, Dr. Schaeffer wasn't there. He was in the midst of filming Whatever Happened to the Human Race. Yeah, and then... when they finished that, he discovered that he had cancer and was away being treated. So most of my first experience of La Brie was three other people there. His two of his daughters, Priscilla Sandry and Debbie Middleman, were there with their husbands. There was an amazing community of extraordinary. There were about a dozen families who were part of the La Brie community at the time. And when I arrived, oh, I'd say 110 people from around the world who were there. And for a boy from a small town, Alabama, I had never experienced anything like it. These were not just thoughtful and interesting people, but people who were asking the same kind of questions that I was asking, and people who had come at it from, especially Francis Schaeffer, from a different background than I did. My background was pretty scientistic. We made a sharp distinction between the sacred and the secular, and the sacred was superior. Mm-hmm. At the end of every worship service in the church that I grew up with, you were given three opportunities. You could make a profession of faith, you could rededicate your life, or you could dedicate yourself to full-time Christian service. And by that, we meant you get your paycheck from the church.
Right? Yes.
One of the things I think that had rattled me in college was when I was at home, I was content to live in the church. Was a great place. I just spent hours at church. Every time the right. door was open, I was at church, right? The more I, at university, discovered the rest of the world is wonderfully interesting, right? Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of amazing stuff out there. And I thought, I'm not really exactly sure why I thought, it's either or. Mm. I can do one or I can do the other. And the first thing that Dr. Schaefer and his associates did for me that was helpful was to help me see, no, that's not the way it works at all. All of life, short of sin, is spiritual and meant to be lived to the glory of God. And the gospel is relevant to all that stuff. And for me, it was like, I was going down for the third time and somebody threw me a life preserve.
I know that when I came out of a similar situation, I did not come to Christ until I was 20. But it was, and these are wonderful people. I have no intention of saying anything negative about them, but it was the environment into which I came as a new believer. And it was very much of that, the pietistic, wonderful people. When I came into that community, I thought, boy, this is great. I found people. I had not been looking for anything, but it happened to me. It was later on. I kept having these questions, but those questions weren't seem to be the same kind of questions that those in my community had. And so their response is, well, you just need to believe. And that was quite the problem.
If you're having problems believing, you need to spend more time reading a Bible and praying.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. And again, they were wonderful people. But I just said these questions and they kept coming up. And then I read somewhere in Schaefer that I think the God who was there, something to the effect you did not have to commit intellectual suicide to become a Christian.
I went through a period of being really angry at my upbringing. Because you didn't equip me very well, right? And I had to come to realize that, you know, it's not as if they had something that I needed and refused to give it to me. They gave me what they had.
Yes.
And they gave me the gospel, and they really did. And I'm grateful for that. I'm incredibly grateful for that. And I had to learn how to be more sympathetic and more patient and say, those questions aren't bad things. Mm-hmm. I had been in Le Brie for just a few months, and I went back home for Christmas. And I got invited to speak at a church that I had been youth pastor and music minister in. These are all my friends, right? And I did a Bible study on Sunday evening before the worship service, and it was on sharing your faith. And my first question was, what is faith, right? And I said, you know, well, faith is understanding and believing God and then applying that in what we do. And sharing faith then begins with, you know, taking people's questions seriously and helping them to see and understand that. And then I tried to make a case that there's a difference between questions and doubts, right? And that questions are approved in the scriptures, and this is the way we grow in wisdom. And these were all my friends. If I had said black is white and up is down, they would have said that was wonderful. But in the worship service thereafter, they had a guest speaker who had sat through mine. Yeah. And have you ever been in a church service in which someone spoke up and said, I had prepared one message, but the Lord, the Holy Spirit, has laid enough you.
Yes.
Have you heard a good sermon? Yes. This guy did. And he went on to talk about those people who need a reason to believe, other than the fact that God said it, and I believed it, and that did it. And
That's heartbreaking.
It is. And you want to go, now, sorry, I'm not speaking against faith.
Right.
I'm not. You know, I'm genuinely not. Yeah. I'm saying, if anything, the faith is big enough to stand all of these issues that you're actually struggling with.
So you did meet Schaefer at some point, I assume.
Yeah.
And, of course, he was. By that time, he'd become busy. He's traveling a lot to the States, and, of course, he's struggling, though I think somewhat went into a little bit of remission with the cancer. But so when you meet Schaefer, what is it that stands out in your mind as you reflect?
I'm sorry, my wife was Mrs. Schaefer's secretary for 4 years before we got
married. Oh, okay.
And you ought to be talking to her. You really ought to be talking to her. And I would hate for this to be published.
You can tell me afterwards.
Thank you. I'll tell you afterwards. Yeah. It was an extraordinary thing. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I go walking into their home looking for Mary Jane, the woman who is my wife now, and Dr. Schaefer standing up in the door of the kitchen, and Mrs. Schaefer is talking at him. Mrs. Schaefer was a very talkative person.
Yes.
And he turns to me and he says, "It's like Niagara Falls, isn't it? It never stops." Now, I don't know what to say to that.
Yes.
Is Mary Jane here? I suppose that's not a bad way, actually, of saying what I want to say about the Schaefers. They were extraordinary people and ordinary people.
Yes.
And living with them, you got to see their good side and their bad side. And it was incredibly encouraging for me to see the Lord use them in extraordinary ways, despite their bad sides.
Did you have conversations? I'm sure you must have had conversations with Francis.
Yeah.
And what were they like?
Well, Dr. Schaefer one-on-one was at his best. Mrs. Schaefer was at her best when she's got a crowd of people around her and everybody's talking all at the same time. But if you wanted to have a good, thoughtful, serious conversation about something, Dr. Schaefer was an amazing person to talk to. And he was, you know, if you go to him for advice, he would always, with me at least, begin by saying, "Okay, now, you know, I'm not the Holy Spirit. I can't tell you what to do. I can help you consider what the scriptures say, and I can help ask you some questions that may help you understand what you really want. But, you know, don't come and ask me to tell you what to do, because I'm not the person who should do that." And, I always appreciated that.
Yes.
Because I had grown up with plenty of people who were willing to fill in for the Holy Spirit, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had others tell me that you had the sense that when you were with Schaefer, there was, in a way, nobody else in the room, nobody else around, that you just had his full attention.
You did. And that was what... Not only was he really good at it, I think that's really what he loved. That was good.
Well, Schaefer's had an influence, at least in some corners of Christianity. So what do you think it was that made Schaefer such a good apologist, particularly on the one-on-one?
Well, I think part of it was his background. He didn't grow up with it. And as a result, he didn't take things for granted that a lot of people who grew up with it did. And he wasn't afraid to question some things that people who grew up with it did. And that made him a great person for people from my generation who showed up in Labrie. He could be properly empathetic. Now, I've been where you are. I know what it feels like to wrestle with what you're wrestling with. And it's not so much that I feel like I know all the answers to all of your questions, but I can talk thoughtfully and graciously and substantially about the kind of things that you're playing with now. That was good.
So today, do you think that Schaefer, his approach has any merit for evangelicalism today as we seek to reach the world for Christ?
Well, yes and no. No, in the sense that the times have changed, and unlike the 60s and 70s and the 50s, there aren't tons of people out wandering around asking questions anymore.
Yes.
That means that the kind of things that he wanted to do, which are still important, you have to start further back. You need to persuade people of the importance of asking the questions, and that asking the questions will get them somewhere that they really could want to be.
So when you spent 16 years at Labrie, so that would have been, so some of that time would have been after Schaefer died?
We moved with Dr. and Mrs. Schaefer, we meaning my wife and I, moved with Dr. and Mrs. Schaefer from Switzerland to Rochester in 1983.
Oh.
And then Dr. Schaefer died in 1984.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Without getting into things that might be more personal, do you have anything that you'd want to say about how you watched the Schaefers as they processed this event in their life that surely meant, unless God intervened?
Because they were processing that from the time that I met them. I arrived in Switzerland in August of 1978. Dr. Schaefer was diagnosed with cancer in October of 1978. So I never saw them not doing this.
Okay.
Again, I'll make a contrast to what I grew up with. We had a tendency in the face of death and suffering to resort to triumphalism.
Yes.
Christ has conquered death, so onward and upward. And the Schaefers didn't do that. When Dr. Schaefer was being treated for his cancer, you learned quickly, if you ran into him, not to ask, "Dr. Schaefer, how are you?" Because if you did, he would give you a rundown of everything. Here's what I'm taking now, here's the impact it's having on me, here are the things that I'm struggling with, here. He answered the question.
Yes.
If you didn't want to know, you shouldn't ask. And that was an encouragement. Death's an ugly thing.
Yes, it's an enemy.
It's an ugly thing, and they didn't pretend that it was anything else. Now, they had a hope that went beyond death, and they lived in that hope. And I hope that I can be faithful in pursuing that hope, even in the face of my own death. So we moved here in 83. Dr. Schaefer was finishing up the Great Evangelical Disaster.
The Great Evangelical Disaster, right.
And he was trying to get it done, and then he was going out on a tour to promote the book.
Yes.
And in and out of the hospital. And I remember thinking, you're dying.
Yes.
Take some time.
Yeah.
And that's not the way they function.
And I think if you would ask him, is that what I should do? He would probably just say, if I read him right, well, no, this is what the Lord is leading me to do.
It is. And some other people were pushing him too at the same time.
Yes.
Well, may it not just have been the Lord.
Mm. yes.
But, the day he died, Mrs. Schaefer called us. We lived right down the hill. And she was crying.
Sure.
And, mm-hmm. and she said, I had hoped there would be a sign.
Mm.
The wind would blow.
Yes.
And she said, there was no sign.
Mm.
And right next to the bed was Dr. Schaefer's Bible. And she said, this is what he staked it on all of his life.
Yeah.
Why should I expect anything more than this?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember her giving a talk on that and making that very point. Mm-hmm. It was just the last breath. Nothing. Mm-hmm. They were, yes, the reality of living in a fallen world. It wasn't just something that they preached, but how do you live that way?
And the practice of grace in the face of fallenness.
Mm. Yes.
And the way that they ministered that grace to one another. Mm. They were very different people. You probably heard this.
Yes.
And that created conflicts between them.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of go back and forth feeling sorry for, oh, you poor man, oh, you poor woman.
Mm-hmm.
But, my wife would say, if she were here, looking at the Schaefers manage those differences.
Yes.
If they can stay married, anybody can.
You
anybody can.
Would have probably met Jane Stuart Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I have.
Oh, yeah.
And
you know Jane?
Yes, I've interviewed, because now she's gone home to be with the Lord, but I interviewed her several years ago.
There is.
She would say.
No one as large and colorful as Jane.
Yes.
An amazing woman. Yeah.
So, Greg, we find ourselves now in the 21st century. You're working on college, university campus. You're confronting the generation that's doing that sort of thing now. They're in the university. They're thinking about what are they going to do with their lives, et cetera, et cetera. So do you think anything that you learned from Schaefer makes you a better persuader in that context?
I wouldn't be doing what we were doing if it hadn't been for what the Schaefers had taught us. And to be able to turn to grad students and say, your faith really is relevant to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and not just tangentially, it is essentially relevant to what you're doing. And to be able to make a theological foundation for that, which is a foundation I did not grow up with,
mm-hmm.
right? And then not only at that point to be able to say, you ought to do this,
mm-hmm.
right? But to give encouragement that you can.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that from Dr. and Mrs. Schaefer and from so many of their associates. Yeah.
The when Schaefer first was recognized here in the States shortly after 65 with the, you know, the Wheaton lectures, he was not well received at first in the more evangelical group. I think that didn't take until maybe somewhat time after that.
Early 70s, Christian bookstores were all full of Paul Little and Francis Schaefer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I was in college, those were the books I remember. I didn't read any of them, but I remember seeing them going in.
The young people who were at LaBrie when you arrived, were they asking some of the same questions you were? Or were those, and were they mostly, at that point, were they mostly Christians trying to do maybe some of the same thing you're doing? Or were they unbelievers who were coming with their questions?
They were mostly Christians who were trying to do the same things I was doing.
And that was a little bit of a change, was it not, for LaBrie?
Yeah, when the Schaefer started in the 1950s, he was going down to the university in Lausanne.
Mm-hmm.
He had daughters who were in school there and meeting students there, talking with them. And then they were coming home with their kids and spending weekends with them and then spending weeks and then taking a semester off, then taking the summer off. So the contact initially was more non-Christians.
Mm-hmm.
But then there were a whole lot of people who grew up in situations like me that needed a little help and encouragement too. There were non-Christians who were there.
Yes.
But they were a minority while I was there, not a majority.
Did you ever have Friday night meetings as they had early on, where Schaefer would just come down and
sit on top of the fireplace in the chapel and answer questions for 2 or 3 hours?
Yes.
Yeah, we sure did. Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, I can tell you one I remember.
Okay.
Yeah. There was one guy, I don't remember the guy's name, but he just had a ton of questions.
Mm-hmm.
He was a skeptic, not a believer at all. And Dr. Schaefer basically spent the entire evening talking with him.
Mm-hmm.
And question after question after question after question. And then at the end of it, Dr. Schaefer turned back to him and said, "Do you have more questions?"
Mm-hmm.
He said, "No." "Well, do you think you've received good answers?" And he said, "Yeah, pretty good." He said, "Well, then you should believe."
Mm-hmm.
This isn't entertainment.
Yes.
We've been talking about things that are important. Mm-hmm. What would it take you to believe?" And the guy said, "Well, if I walked out tonight and saw that the stars had rearranged themselves to spell out the name God, then I would believe." Mm. Ha, ha, ha. You know? And Dr. Schaefer said, "Well, I doubt that." Yeah. So my wife's mother, before she was my wife, came over for the wedding, actually, and was very skeptical about Dr. Schaefer. She came from a Roman Catholic background. It was a Saturday night discussion that, you know, we were riding back up to, my wife was living with the Schaefers at the time. Mm-hmm. She was still Mrs. Schaefer's secretary. And she said, "Yeah, it's not what I expected. Mm-hmm. Not what I expected. I expected more pedantic, more dogmatic, less understanding, less engaging." That got her attention.
Hmm.
And Dr. Schaefer was really good in a setting like that.
Yes.
Being able to, "Okay, we've got a crowd of people around here, but I'm really going to talk to you."
Hmm.
"Yeah, and I'm not putting on a show. You know, it's going to be like it's just me and you in the room." And when I say he was really good at that, he was really good at that.
I'm sure everybody sitting there would have benefited from what was going on, even if they weren't the one asking the questions.
You benefit in all sorts of ways,
yes.
Right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Now, on occasion, I mean, I'll say this, after my wife and I took over one of the LaBrie chalets, we had people there that were living with us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I got to know them because they lived with me,
mm-hmm.
and then they'd show up on a discussion with Dr. Schaefer and ask a question. And because he hadn't lived with them and did not know them as well as I did, he answered the wrong question. He wasn't omniscient. Nobody is, right? And I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I understand what you think he's asking. That's not what he's asking.
Which brings up an interesting point that I would like to ask you, and that is, did he ever say that to somebody like, I think I've answered your question, but was that really the question you were asking?
Yes, he would.
He would. Okay. So what do you think Schaefer has to tell us today?
The gospel is still relevant to everything. Now, I'm saying this because this is still, I mean, this is the thing that got me initially. Right. And we are working with students at the University of Texas, and that's what they struggle with most of all. The idea in particular, it's not pietism anymore that produces this, but the idea that religion is a personal and private issue matter. It only has to do with me and my relationship with God. It doesn't really have anything to do with anything else. And it's not that people are not interested in celebrating something personal and private, but if that's all there is to it, it gets boring after a while, and I can fill that hole somewhere else. And being able to see, yes, the gospel is about life. It's not just about religion. This generation needs to hear that, if anything, more than my generation did.
You say it's relevant. I'd like for you to unpack that a little bit by what you mean, because we hear that word thrown around all the time today, which means, in some circles, it means dressing like the world, talking like the world. So what do you mean?
Well, a lot of the work that we're doing, we try to talk about the theological foundation for vocation, looking at all of life really being spiritual and meant to be lived to the glory of God. But then in order to flesh that out, we have to bring in Christian scholars from around the country who are working in different areas. The graduate students we're working with are preparing to go into academic disciplines, most of them. So these would be their colleagues or people that they aspire to be like. And we have them talk first about their work. Here is my work. Here is what I am doing, you know, in sociology or biochemistry or anything else. And then only after that, now here's how my faith relates to my work. It's not a question of here's how I witness to colleagues that I am working with and therefore justify what I'm doing by putting a religious gloss on it. This is how this undergirds this. And then you see the light go on, right? We have, sometimes it's easier to do than it is with others. We have a friend who's a sociology professor who was looking several years ago for a dissertation topic, right? He was an MK, grew up in the Middle East with his parents there, started digging around and came across what he kind of calls an Atlas of World Missions, 1925. I don't know who published it, somebody's attempt to list where all the missionaries were in 1925. And then he dug around and started finding out there are atlases for world missions going back 150 years. He says, this is data, right? So he starts looking at when did the missionaries go into a particular area? And then how does this culture change in measurable ways in things like the availability of healthcare, education, the treatment of women and children, the development of democracy. And what he finds over and over and over again is that the gospel changes things, even in the face of other factors that might be cited to account for that kind of thing. And you hear the sociology department at the University of Texas may be the most antagonistic on campus to the gospel. It's not the sciences, it's the social sciences. And to hear, oh, no, 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 even here, my faith is relevant, right? There's a direct connection between what I'm studying and what I believe.
And that whole approach is the heritage of Francis Schaeffer?
I can't tell you. I mean, we are part, meaning at this point, Hill House is the name of our center. Yes. We are part of a consortium of Christian studies centers from around the country. So there are all sorts of different places on different college campuses mm-hmm. that are trying to do something similar, although we all do it in different ways here. We get together for an annual meeting each year. And what always comes up is the meeting at the meetings is, how did I get into this? It was through the work of Francis Schaeffer.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. It's excellent. Thank you for sharing this with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to ramble.